just where she belonged. There were no wild things here. Her dad held her close and stroked her hair.
You okay?
She felt like a baby. Sorry, Daddy, she mumbled.
Everyone has bad dreams sometimes.
She knew that was true, because when she was little, she used to hear him screaming in his sleep, and she'd go to him and climb into his bed. He never woke up, but he stopped yelling when she was with him. In the morning, he'd smile tiredly at her and say something about how she really should be a big girl and learn to sleep in her own bed.
Don't make me go away, Daddy. I won't lie anymore, I promise. And I won't sock Jacob in the nose ever. I'll be good.
Oh, princess, he said, sighing. I should have known your mom would come back for you. I should have prepared us both. It's just, I tried not to think about her.
'Cause she's mean?
No,
Daddy said, and it scared her how sad he sounded.
She's the opposite of mean.
Maybe she got mean when she was a spy.
She's not a spy, princess.
How do you know?
I just know.
Grace bit her lower lip nervously. She wanted to just snuggle up to her daddy and talk about something else, but she knew if she did, she'd just have another bad dream again.
What's she like?
Daddy shook his head. For a long time, he was quiet. Grace was about to ask something else when he said,
I met your mom in high school.
His voice was weird. It sounded like he had something stuck in his throat.
I would have asked her out on that first day, but she was already Mia's friend. So, I tried not to love her. Until, one night, she almost kissed me. That changed everything. I couldn't stay away from her after that.
Girls aren't supposed to do that, Grace mumbled around her thumb.
Your grandmother would tell you that girls can do anything. That's what she told my sister anyway.
Grace frowned. Daddy seemed all gooey, and his eyes were shiny. He was acting like he loved Mommy, but that was stupid because he said she didn't like him. None of this made sense.
But she didn't want me, Grace said. She left me.
Sometimes people don't have a choice about what they do.
Is she gonna visit me again?
Daddy looked down at Grace.
Your mom is really special, princess, and I know she loves you. That's what matters now. The reason she's been gone is, well, really, it was my fault, too. I let her be the one who was wrong, but I was wrong, too.
Wrong about what?
He acted like he was going to say something, then he must have changed his mind. He kissed her forehead instead.
Daddy?
You go to sleep, baby. This is all going to work out. You'll see. We're going to work all this out.
You'll stay with me, right, Daddy?
Of course. But she's your mom, Gracie. And you need her, no matter what you think.
I screwed up, Scott, Lexi said again. She was in his office, pacing back and forth in front of the window, chewing on her thumbnail.
Lexi. Lexi!
She stopped, faced him. Did you say something?
Sit down. You're making me dizzy.
She went to his desk and stood there, looking down at Scott, who looked a little tired today. His hair was a mess, and his tie was askew.
Are you okay?
Danny has colic. Jenny and I aren't sleeping much, but I'm fine.
Lexi reached down for the framed photograph on Scott's desk. In it, a pudgy, bald baby boy held a plastic key. It made her sad, seeing this baby, thinking of Grace, wondering if she'd had colic, or if she'd slept through the night like an angel. I don't know anything about being a mom, she said quietly, feeling defeated again.
No one does at the start, Scott said, I kept looking for a manual with Danny, but all he came with was a blanket. And I'm pretty sure his grandma gave it to him. Sit down, Lexi.
She collapsed more than anything, realizing all of a sudden how exhausted she was. I don't know what I was thinking.
Scott handed her a newspaper. It won't do any good to dwell on your mistake. Now is the time for action, Lexi. We need to show the court and the Faradays that you're here to stay and that you're ready to parent Grace. The best way to do that is to find a job.
A job? Of course.
I've circled a few possibilities. I wish I had enough business to employ you here.
You've done enough. Thank you, Scott.
Jenny has a navy blue suit that she thought you might want to borrow. It's hanging off the door in the conference room.
Lexi was once again filled by gratitude to this man and his wife. She got slowly to her feet. Danny is a lucky kid. You know that, right?
He looked up. So is Grace.
I hope so, Lexi said quietly, feeling a thin resurgence of hope. Saying goodbye to Scott, she went into the conference room and put on Jenny's navy blue summer weight suit. It didn't look great with Lexi's ice blue t-shirt and flip-flops, but it was the best she had. In less than 40 minutes, she was on her bike, heading to the local drugstore, which had advertised for a sales clerk. Full-time. Minimum wage. Inside the bright store, with its array of colorful shelving, she paused and looked around. At the nearest cash register, a heavy-set woman with a beehive-like gray pile of hair stood, talking on her cell phone. Lexi went to the checkout line and stood there.
You buying something, hon?
The woman said, lowering the phone just a little. I'm here for the job.
Oh.
The woman bent forward, pressed one scythe-like red fingernail to the store intercom and said,
Manager to register one, please.
Then she smiled at Lexi, straightened, and went back to her phone conversation. Thank you, Lexi said, although the woman wasn't listening. Lexi saw the manager approach register one. He was a tall, thin man, very Ichabod Craney, with a nose like an eagle's beak and spiny eyebrows that grew wild as blackberry bushes. She moved toward him confidently, extended her hand. Hello, sir. I'm Alexa Bale. I've come to apply for the clerk position. He shook her hand.
Follow me.
She followed him back into a small, windowless office that was stacked high with cardboard boxes. He sat behind the metal desk and pointed to a stool in the corner. She dragged the stool over to the desk and sat down, feeling a little conspicuous on the perch.
Do you have a resume?
Lexi felt her cheeks heat up. No, it's a sales clerk job, right? In high school I worked at Amore, the ice cream shop. I'm good with money, and even better with people. I'm a good employee, and I can work any shift. I could get you some recommendations.
When did you work at Amore?
From 2002 to 2004. I quit in June, after I graduated from high school. He wrote something down on a piece of paper that looked like an application.
And you're home from college now? Is this a summer job for you?
No. I'm looking for full-time employment. He looked up sharply. His thick eyebrows V'd together.
You went to Pine Island High?
Yes.
Most local kids don't work here full-time. Where have you worked since high school?
Lexi swallowed hard. Part-time in a library.
What library?
She let out a quiet breath and lost her good posture. Purdy.
You don't mean...
The prison. I've been in prison for a few years, but now I'm out. And I'll be a good employee, I guarantee you that. She was speaking, but it was useless. She saw the way his face shuddered at the word prison, the way he wouldn't meet her gaze now.
All right, then, he said, giving her his first smile, and it was pure fiction. I'll contact you when we've made our decision.
That means no job, she said,
sliding off the stool. It means I'll contact you if we want to hire you.
Yeah.
She tried to stay optimistic. It was only the first of many potential jobs. Maybe other employers would be more liberal-minded. So, do you want my phone number?
He looked at her finally. You can give it to me if you want.
She wanted to tell him no way and walk out with some stitch of dignity. But she had grace to consider. So she wrote down her phone number and left the drugstore's bright interior. Outside, she opened her newspaper and found the next opening, a waitress position at Esmeralda's Mexican Kitchen. For the rest of the afternoon, Lexi tried to believe in herself, even as one job after another evaporated in front of her. Most of the available positions were part-time, without benefits. She lost track of the time some employer had mentioned the economy as her enemy. Apparently, she'd gone to prison in good times and come out in bad. Minimum wage was less than $10 an hour. That gave her maybe $1,500 a month income before taxes. Well over half would go to rent. But apparently none of that mattered because she wouldn't get a job. She'd spoken to 12 employers today, and every conversation ended up the same way. What have you been doing since high school? College, really? Where?
Who was your last employer?
Oh, and the look. The prison library.
I'm sorry. The position had been filled. You're too young. I'll let you know.
One excuse after another. The hell of it was, she couldn't blame them. Who wanted to hire a 24-year-old ex-con? And if that weren't bad enough, after her useless job interviews, she'd checked out housing on the island. There were only 3 apartment complexes, and one thing was sure, she couldn't afford to live in any of them. The smallest of the available units rented for $950 per month. Plus, the landlord required first and last month's rent and a security deposit in advance. $2,400, due on the day she signed the lease agreement. It might as well be $1,000,000. A few phone calls confirmed that Port George was no better. There were more rentals available on the other side of the bridge, but they were still way too expensive. The whole day defeated Lexi. By the time she gave up, it was 7 o'clock at night, and she just wanted to be alone. She rode her bike through the quiet summer night and parked outside Scott's office. Using her key, she walked inside. All she wanted to do was sleep or scream.
Lexi, is that you?
She sighed and forced a smile. She owed Scott everything. It wasn't his fault she was such a pathetic loser.
Hey, Scott, she said, heading into his office. You're working late.
I was waiting for you. I have a surprise. Come here.
He took her by the hand and led her to the conference room. On the long wooden table, a laptop was open.
Here, he said. Sit down.
Lexi did as she was told. Scott left the room for a few moments and then returned.
Okay, we're ready.
He pushed a button on the laptop, and Aunt Eva's worried face filled the screen.
I don't know, Babs. How can you tell if it's working?
The sight of her aunt's face was like a tonic. Lexi felt a loosening in her chest. For the first time in hours, she smiled. She wasn't as alone as she'd thought.
Hey, Aunt Eva, she said, scooting forward.
She's here, Barbara.
Eva's face broke into a bright smile.
Come look! This is my Lexi!
My Lexi. A heavy-set woman with a head of steel-gray curls bent at the waist and peered into the camera, smiling.
Hello, Alexa. My sister never stops talking about you.
Hey, Barbara,
Lexi said softly, overcome with emotion. Barbara's face moved out of view, and Eva scooted closer to her computer. She looked different, older,
Her cheeks were deeply tanned and lined, and her hair had gone completely white.
So, tell me everything, Lexi.
Scott left the room and shut the door behind him.
I met Gracie,
Lexi said. It was the first thing that came to mind.
How is she?
Sad, beautiful,
lonely.
Oh, that must be hard to see.
It's all hard, Aunt Eva. I didn't want to come here because I knew it would be hard, but now I'm here and everything is a mess.
I suppose you've seen your young man.
Yeah.
And?
Lexi shrugged. It's been a long time.
You look tired, Lexi.
It's been a hard day. It's going to be hard for me to get a job and hard to afford a place to live. Impossible, maybe.
You just got out, Lexi. Maybe you need to come home and get taken care of. Barb and me got a hide-a-bed just waiting for you. You could get a job down here and save up your money. Floyd at the Tilt-A-Curl says he'd be happy to hire you to answer phones and clean up. Without rent to pay, you'll have a nice little nest egg in no time.
Home. Lexi had to admit, the ease of it appealed to her. She needed to be wanted somewhere.
But how can I leave Grace again? She'll never forgive me.
You know how hard it can be on a kid to have a mama who isn't ready. Take some time for yourself. Get strong and happy, and then go back to your daughter. You go back when you've got your life together. I think that's the responsible thing to do.
The responsible thing, she repeated, hating the idea, even as she recognized the truth of it. She would only confuse Grace now. How could she be a mother when her own life was in shambles? Grace deserved better. She deserved stability. Lexi knew about moms who were unreliable. It didn't make a child feel safe.
Alexa?
She smiled as brightly as she could. She couldn't talk about this anymore. It was breaking her heart.
So, what's up with you? Did you ever take those knitting classes?
Lord, yes, Eva laughed. Barbara and me got enough blankets to fill a motel. When you come down here.
The view from the 42nd floor was dreary on this wet June day. The Space Needle hovered to her right, a black and white disc suspended against a dull gray sky. Jude stood at the window, seeing her ghostly reflection in the glass. She was trying to stand still, appear calm, but it wasn't working. She felt jittery and uncomfortable in her own skin, as if she'd drunk 10 cups of coffee on an empty stomach. She chewed on her thumbnail and went back to pacing. Panic lurked just outside her field of vision. She felt it stalking her, a shadow in the corner, waiting to pounce. But she couldn't pinpoint the source of her fear. She just knew that she was afraid, that she'd been afraid ever since she'd read that letter of Lexi's.
I'm proud of you, Jude, Harriet said in that strangely even voice of hers.
It took a lot of courage to face Lexi again.
I didn't face her. In fact, I tried not to look at her.
But you did look at her, didn't you? Jude nodded, gnawing on her thumbnail now, tapping her foot. What did you see?
I saw the girl who killed my daughter, and my granddaughter's mother, and my son's first love, and a girl I used to care about.
Jude scratched nervously at the side of her face. Her skin was crawling suddenly.
What's wrong with me, Dr. Bloom? I feel like I'm going crazy.
Not crazy. I think maybe you're ready to try a compassionate friend meeting. There's one today, you know. At 2.
That talk again?
Jude sighed and sat down, tapping her foot, fisting and unfisting her hands.
I am not going to sit in a meeting with a bunch of other grieving parents. Should I talk about Mia? Will that bring her back?
In a way.
Spoken like a person who hasn't lost a child. No thanks.
The only way to get close, so help me God, if you say closure, I'll walk out. There's no closure. There's just a bunch of claptrap. I still can't listen to music, any music. I still cry almost every time I shower. Sometimes I scream in the car. I still talk to my daughter and know she can't hear me. None of that goes away.
You used to say that you felt gray.
I said I live in the gray, a thick, ashy fog.
And you thought the rain looked ashy the night Mia died.
Yeah. So?
Harriet peered at her over the rims of her half-lenses. Her point had been made. So, if you're still in the gray, I think maybe you should look around. Maybe you can see something now. Shapes. People.
Jude stopped chewing her nail.
What do you mean?
I know your pain won't end, Jude. I'm not a fool. But maybe you're finally getting ready to accept that there might be more than just pain. That's why you're acting like an overbred poodle right now. You're afraid of feeling, and it's happening anyway. You opened up enough to let Lexi bail into your house. That's a huge step, Jude.
I read Grace a story and played a board game with her, Jude said quietly.
How did that make you feel?
Jude looked up.
Like a grandmother.
Tears filled her eyes. She hadn't realized that until right now.
I've been hard on Zack. I just couldn't look at him without remembering.
Remembering is okay, Jude.
Not the way I do it, Doc. It breaks me.
Maybe you need to be broken a little before you can put yourself back together.
I'm afraid I won't be able to put myself back together.
You will. You're on your way, Jude.
What do I do next?
Follow your heart.
Jude shivered at the idea of that. She'd worked so hard to shut down her emotions. The idea of opening them up again was terrifying. She didn't know if she could do it, if she even wanted to.
For the rest of her scheduled hour, Jude tried to listen to Dr. Bloom, but that sense of panic was rising again, drowning out everything except the in-and-out strains of her own breathing. The idea of feeling terrified her more with each passing second. What if she opened herself up again, and the pain simply engulfed her? What if she lost all the progress she'd made? It hadn't been that long ago that Jude had been practically useless, a crying gray form that couldn't get through the day without drugs. At the end of her session, she said something to Dr. Bloom, she didn't remember what, and walked outside. The weather now was both bright and gray. Clouds the color of beach sand hung low in the sky. Sunlight glowed through in places, while rain fell in drops so small no local even noticed, but tourists in the market huddled beneath brightly colored umbrellas. She stood at the corner in front of Dr. Bloom's building, beneath this crying sky, and tried to remember which way to go. It felt suddenly as if any move could be wrong.
"Are you okay, ma'am?"
a kid said, appearing beside her. With shaggy hair and a skateboard clamped under his arm, he reminded her of long ago, or maybe a second ago, when Zack and Mia had been in middle school. She would have given anything to run to her car right now, to drive down to the ferry terminal and go home. But she couldn't. It was Wednesday.
"I'm fine," she said to the kid.
"Thanks." She moved forward, walking slowly. Rain tapped at her head. Occasionally a drop landed in her eye, but she barely noticed. In no time at all, she was standing in front of her mother's art gallery. On either side of the closed door hung large canvases. One was a traditional landscape, the tulips in the Skagit Valley, done in golds and reds, beneath a shadowy, melancholy black sky. The other was a still life, a vase full of pink dahlias. Only on close examination could one see the hairline crack in the aged-looking porcelain. Next door,
She opened one of the huge glass doors and entered an elegant lobby. Saying hello to the doorman, she headed for the elevator and rode it to the top floor. The elevator opened onto the penthouse, 4,000 square feet of ivory marble flooring dotted with exquisite, uncomfortable French antique furniture. Floor-to-ceiling windows captured the Seattle skyline, Elliott Bay, and on good days, Mount Rainier.
"Judith," her mother said, coming toward her, "you're early. Would you like a glass of wine?"
Desperately. Jude followed her mother into the living room. The few solid walls in this space were painted a creamy white and supported giant works of art, none of which Jude liked. They were all dark and despairing somehow, sad. Just looking at the artwork in this room had always depressed Jude. Other than the paintings, there was no color anywhere. Jude sat down in a white chair by the fireplace. Her mother brought her a glass of white wine.
"Thanks, Mother."
Her mother sat down on the pale sofa opposite Jude. She looked ready to host an elegant party. Her white hair was coiled with effortless chic into a French twist. Her face was expertly made up to emphasize her green eyes and minimize the lines that fanned out around her thin lips.
"You look upset," Mother said, sipping her wine.
It was a strangely intimate observation for her mother to make. Normally, Jude would have smiled and made up a pretty excuse, but she had been undone by Lexi's return, by that damn letter, by the obvious pain her son was now in. All of it. She had no strength left, and she was afraid, even though she didn't know what scared her. Staying put, letting go, holding on, nothing felt safe anymore. And she wanted someone to talk to, someone to help her find a way out. But her mother was hardly that person. She wanted to smile and change the subject and pretend she had nothing pressing on her mind. But her whole life was falling apart, it seemed, and she had no strength left for pretense.
"Why is it we never really talk?" she said slowly.
"I don't even know you, and you certainly don't know me. Why is that?" Her mother put down her wine glass. Backlit by the gray day, she looked ethereal. For the first time, Jude noticed how old her mother looked, how tired. Her shoulders were thin as bird bones, and her spine had begun to curve forward.
"You, of all people, should understand, Judith."
Her mother's voice was sharp and thin, a razor blade, but the look in her eyes was perhaps the softest expression Jude had ever seen. There was sadness there. Had it always been there?
"Why should I understand?"
Her mother glanced out the window.
"I loved your father," she said quietly, a crack in her voice. "After he passed, I knew I had you to care for, and I wanted to care for you, to love you. But there was nothing inside me. Even my ability to paint vanished. I thought it would last for a day, or a week."
She looked at Jude. "It just went on. And when it finally lifted enough that I could breathe, you were gone from me. I didn't even know how to repair it." Jude stared at her mother in shock. How was it that she'd never made this connection? She'd known that her mother quit painting on the day of her father's funeral, that she'd walked out of the house and never come back, not really.
"I watched the kind of mother you became, and I was so proud of you. But I never said that. I think you wouldn't have heard me anyway, although perhaps I want to think that. Either way, I didn't say it. Then I saw you make the same mistake I did. I saw you stop loving Zach, and yourself. It broke my heart. I would have told you what you were doing wrong, but you were always so sure that I was weak and you were strong. So yes, Judith, you, of all people, you should understand my mistakes. You should know why I treated you the way I did."
Jude didn't know what to say. It felt as if her whole life, her whole identity, had just cracked open. Her mother got to her feet. For a second, Jude thought she was going to walk over here, cross the distance between them, and maybe even sit down beside her.
"You're young," her mother said finally. "You can undo this mistake."
Jude felt herself starting to shake. Here it was, the thing she'd been afraid of.
"How?"
"People think love is an act of faith," her mother said. "Sometimes it's an act of will. I didn't have the strength to love you, Jude, or to show that love, I guess. I don't know which it was, and in the end, what's the difference? You're stronger than I ever was." In a way, it was the same thing Dr. Bloom had been saying for years. Jude glimpsed the regret in her mother's gaze, and it was like looking into her own future. She didn't want to someday be 80 years old and alone.
"I'm not the only one who can undo a mistake, Mom."
"I'm not young anymore," her mother said. "I've missed my chance. I know that."
That's what the lunches were about.
"Of course. And that's why you wanted me to take over the gallery, so we'd have something in common."
"Did you ever wonder where the gallery name came from?"
"Jace. Your father named it for all of us. Judith Ann, Caroline, Edward. He thought we'd always be together in it." Mother sighed. "Another regret of mine."
Jude got to her feet. The trembling in her hands eased. Suddenly she felt stronger than she had in months, maybe years. She didn't know how she would correct all the wrong paths she'd taken, but it was time to start undoing her mistakes, one at a time.
"On Saturday, I'm going to take Gracie to the aquarium. Why don't you come with us?"
Mother gave her an uncertain smile.
"Really?
I could meet you at the ferry terminal. We could walk, say, 11 o'clock? We could have lunch at Ivar's after. You and your father used to love throwing French fries to the gulls."
Jude remembered it in a rush, standing by the railing with her parents, throwing fries to the gulls teeming overhead.
"That's it, Pumpkin. Kid's got quite an arm, doesn't she, Caro?"
"He loved us both," Jude said. Her mother nodded. "It's good to talk about him, finally." And just like that, Jude knew what she had to do. Maybe she'd known for years, but just now, this instant, in the sweet glow of this new start, she was ready to try.
"I can't stay for lunch. I'm sorry. There's something I need to do."
"Of course," her mother said. If she was surprised by the sudden change, she didn't show it. She led the way to the elevator. There, they stared at each other for a long time. In her mother's aged porcelain face, Jude saw the long-forgotten image of another woman, one who'd loved to paint.
"I've missed you, Judith," her mother said softly.
"Me too. I'll see you Saturday." Jude left the austere penthouse and returned to the underground parking structure on Virginia Street. From there, she drove out of the dark lot and into a rainy day. Driving carefully, she arrived at the Capitol Hill Community Center. There, she sat in her car for more than 90 minutes, waiting. Every moment she sat there was an act of courage. It would have been so much easier to drive away. That was what she'd done a dozen times before. Finally, a car pulled up and parked in front of her, and then another. Within a few minutes, she could see people going in. Most of them were women, walking alone in the rain, without umbrellas. Jude knew how dangerous and frightening this choice was, but she knew how dangerous the other choice was, too. Love is an act of will. For too long, she'd been afraid of it. Her hand was shaking as she opened her car door and stepped out into the rain. She fisted her hands and walked across the street. A woman came up beside her.
She was young, with flowing black hair and brown eyes that were full of tears. Jude fell into step with the woman, although neither one said anything. A sign beside the open door read, "Compassionate Friends, 2:00 p.m., Grief Support Group." Jude paused, maybe even stumbled. Fear opened up inside her so fast and sharp she couldn't breathe. It occurred to her to turn and run. She wasn't ready for this. She didn't want to do this. What if they wanted her to let go of Mia? The woman beside her touched Jude's hand. Jude gasped, turned. She looked at the woman with the dark hair, and now she saw more than tears. She saw understanding. Here was another woman who had empty eyes and a pinched mouth and had forgotten to color her hair. Jude knew this woman knew how it felt to be both filled with pain and achingly numb. "Is this what I look like?" Jude thought suddenly. She did what she'd never done in her life. She reached out to a stranger and held on. Together, they walked through the open doors. Lexi spent 3 days looking for employment. In the end, it was exactly as it had been in the beginning. No one had a job for an ex-convict with a sociology degree and no real experience. As her prospects dwindled, so did her hope, until by Thursday night, she knew she was just going through the motions. Now, as she sat on her driftwood log at La Riviere Park, she understood. She'd never had a chance, really, and she had no chance now. Lexi closed her eyes at that. She knew what she had to do. The hours down here had been a bandage, nothing more. It was time. She'd put off the inevitable long enough. She walked over to where she'd left her bike and climbed on, pedaling up the hill toward the main road. She bypassed Knight Road and circled back to the Faraday house. Holding tightly to the grips, she made her bumping way down the gravel driveway and stopped at the garage. She was shaking so badly it was hard to position the bike near the side wall of the building, and finally she gave up and let the bike fall into the tall grass. She couldn't help noticing again the runaway garden and remembering how clipped and cared for it once had been. Ripples, she thought. Grief had endless consequences. Pushing that thought aside, she went to the front door and knocked quickly before she lost her nerve. Jude opened the door. "Lexi," she said, obviously surprised. "I want to give you something for Grace." "She's up in Zach's old room, watching a movie." "Oh, I didn't set up an appointment. I thought she'd be at the Silly Bear." "Would you like to see her?" Lexi knew she should say no, but how could she? She nodded. Unable to dredge up words to accompany the gesture, she turned away from Jude and went up the stairs to Zach's old room. At the door, she paused just long enough to draw a strengthening breath. Then she knocked on the door, heard a chirpy "come in," and opened the door.
"Hi, Mommy. What are you doing here?"
Grace sat up in Zach's bed, frowning. Lexi actually stumbled. She tried to cover her mistake with a smile, but realized that she'd done that badly, too. It was a lot to handle all at once. Grace's beautiful face, her saying "Mommy," and Zach's room. Everywhere she looked, she saw reminders of the boy with whom she'd fallen in love. A tangle of plastic dinosaurs, a football, a colorful collection of Disney videotapes, green-spined video games. But it was the worn copy of Jane Eyre sitting on the dresser that killed her. She went to it, picked it up, felt its slick, crinkled cover. Saw her name, scrawled in a lost penmanship on the inside cover. He'd kept it. All these years.
"You're not coming to take me away, are you?"
Grace asked worriedly. Lexi put the book down and turned to face her daughter.
"No. May I sit next to you?"
"Okay."
Lexi climbed into the bed. Zach's bed.
but she shouldn't think about things that didn't matter anymore, and scooted as close to Grace as she dared. I scared you the other day.
Nothing scares me. I punched Jacob in the nose, and he's way bigger than me.
I shouldn't have said I wanted you to live with me. That wasn't what I meant to say at all.
Oh, that. You don't want me to live with you?
Lexi flinched. I don't know much about being a mom, and I can see how much you love being with your daddy. Grace seemed to relax at that.
Do you know how to make cupcakes?
No. Why?
I don't know. Moms just make stuff.
Lexi leaned back against Zack's headboard. The bulletin board across the room, above the dresser, was still full of newspaper clippings and ribbons he'd won in high school. For what, she couldn't even remember. So, I guess you want the kind of mom who makes cupcakes and walks you to school. Grace laughed and covered her mouth to stifle the sound.
I live way too far to walk. Samantha Green's mom makes everyone a cape for Halloween. Do you know how to sew?
Nope. I pretty much blow in the good mother category. Lexi looked down at her daughter, feeling loss yawn inside of her.
I wish I had a chipmunk, Grace said. I'd let you play with it.
Lexi couldn't help laughing. That would be cool.
Daddy says chipmunks aren't pets, but I think they could be, Grace added, laughing.
She immediately covered her mouth. Lexi gently pulled Grace's hand away from her mouth. Don't ever be afraid to laugh, Gracie. Grace looked up at Lexi through hopeful eyes. Lexi knew she would always remember this moment, and if she were lucky, and she didn't do anything to screw it up, maybe Grace would remember it too. She took the sapphire ring off her finger and offered it to Grace. I'd like you to have this, Grace.
It's a grown-up ring.
Maybe your dad can put it on a chain so you can wear it as a necklace until it fits you.
It's really pretty.
Not as pretty as you are, princess.
That's what my daddy calls me. Why are you giving me this? It's not my birthday.
Lexi swallowed hard. I need to leave, Grace. It doesn't matter what I thought. I was wrong to come here. I'm not ready.
Ready for what?
Lexi couldn't say it out loud.
I'll be back as soon as I can, though. That's what I want you to remember. And I'll write every week and call as much as I can, okay?
Grace's lower lip trembled.
I was mean to you.
You didn't do anything wrong, Lexi said. I shouldn't have come here. I just keep hurting the Faradays, and Can I have a hug? Grace scrambled over Lexi's lap and gave her a huge hug. Lexi clung to her daughter, trying to physically imprint the memory of this embrace on both of them. I love you, Grace, she whispered into her ear. Don't you forget that, okay? She heard Grace's little hiccup, and the sound pushed Lexi over the edge. She felt the start of tears, and this time there was no holding them back.
Don't cry, Mommy.
Lexi wiped her eyes and pulled back just enough so that she was face to face with Grace. Crying is a good thing sometimes. I've waited a long time for those tears.
You can send me your school drawings and I'll put them on my fridge.
Lexi leaned closer and kissed her daughter's plump little mouth.
And I'll learn to make cupcakes. Okay, Grace said.
She looked sad and confused and uncertain. Lexi didn't know how to mend those emotions without making promises she couldn't keep. Some endings simply couldn't be what you dreamed. All she could do was make memories now, say goodbye, and hope for a better future. She'd save her money as fast as she could and come back to claim a life with her daughter. She kissed Grace one last time and uncoiled herself from her daughter. Then she got off the bed and stood there,
looking down. Grace was furiously whispering at her wrist mirror and trying not to cry.
"Don't cry, Gracie. It'll be okay," Lexi said, stroking her hair. "That's what she says."
Lexi actually managed to smile at that.
"You're lucky to have such a good friend, but I'll make you a deal. If you make friends with someone in your class, really make friends, I'll send some cupcakes in September for the first grade party." "How?" "How what?" "How do I make a friend? No one likes me."
Lexi sat down again.
"Well, you can't keep punching boys and lying. If you want to make friends, you have to do friendly things. Who is the nicest girl in your class?" "Samantha, but she never talks to me."
"Okay, tomorrow, you just go up to Samantha and say something nice to her. And you don't cheat or lie one time. Tell her you like playing with her."
"What if I don't?"
"You will," Lexi promised. "I had a best friend once, and I could tell her anything. She always made me smile. I never felt alone when she was around." She hugged her daughter one last time and forced herself to walk away from the bed, past the copy of Jane Eyre, touching it one last time. It didn't mean anything that he'd kept it. Don't think otherwise. In the hallway, she paused and looked back. Grace sat huddled in the big bed, tears streaking down her cheeks.
"I love you, Gracie." "Bye, Mommy," Grace sniffled. "Tell your daddy I said, hey."
She closed the door behind her. She should have run from this house as fast as she could, and she would have, if she hadn't looked down the hallway to Mia's room. She moved toward it, almost instinctively, opened the door. The room welcomed her as it always had, drew her in. She went to the dresser, where Mia's phone lay beside an English lit paper with an A written across the top. A row of plastic briar horses lined the windowsill. There were a dozen pictures of Mia, at play rehearsal, at dance class, sitting by the beach with Zach. There were no pictures of her and Mia in the room anymore. Once, though, they'd been everywhere.
"I haven't let myself come in here in a while," Jude said behind her.
Lexi spun around, her face hot. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have..."
Jude reached down for the stuffed puppy on the nightstand, picked it up. "Daisy doggy. I used to sleep in here.
It worried Miles and my therapist after a while, so I closed the door. Erica cleans it, but I don't come in."
"I can feel her in here," Lexi said quietly.
"Can you? You're lucky then."
Lexi moved closer.
She loved this room, but hated that mirror. She always said it looked like an art project, but she knew how much you liked it.
Jude finally looked up. Her eyes were glazed with tears, and her mouth was an unsteady line.
"Why did you drive that night?"
Lexi was actually grateful for the honesty of the question.
"I've asked myself that a million times. Zach was hammered, and Mia wasn't much better. Neither one of them could stand up, really. They didn't want to call you. It was so late, and they were so drunk."
She paused.
"I didn't want to call you. I wanted you to love me so much. And then Zach got behind the wheel. I couldn't let him drive."
"Why did I let you go that night? I knew there would be drinking, and I gave him the keys."
Lexi moved toward the bed, feeling like a 90-year-old woman with rickety joints and watery eyes, and sat down beside Jude.
"It's my fault, Jude. All mine."
Jude shook her head slowly.
"I wanted to believe that, didn't I?"
"It's the truth.
I'm trying to be a little more honest these days. I know you love Grace. Do you still love Zach?
I've tried to stop. I'll keep trying.
You should talk to him.
I wouldn't know what to say.
He'll be back soon, Jude said quietly. Talk to him. Tell him how you feel. Lexi almost broke at that small kindness. It reminded her of all the conversations she'd had with Jude over the years, all the moments when they'd been like mother-daughter. It was because of Jude that Zach had taken Lexi to the dance, where everything between them had really begun.
They were so lucky to have you, Jude, and they knew it. Mia loved you so much.
I miss her voice. Lexi slipped off the bed and crawled under it, feeling beneath the slats until she found what she was looking for. Holding it, she crawled back out and sat back on her heels, offering Jude the small pink journal with an orange lily painted on the front.
Oh my God,
Jude breathed, reaching out.
Her journal.
Lexi placed it in Jude's hands and then got to her feet.
I'll go now. Tell Zach that I'm going to call Grace once a week, and I'll write even more often.
Jude stared down at the journal, running her palm over it as if it were a piece of expensive silk. What?
Why? I have something important to do before I leave.
Lexi wasn't even sure if Jude was listening.
A goodbye I should have said a long time ago. But Jude, love Grace better, okay? She needs you.
Chapter 27 Mia's Diary. It had been here all this time, waiting. Jude ran her fingertips over the mottled brass lock, and then slowly, she opened the book. Property of Mia Faraday. Private. Keep out. And yes, that means you, Zach Attack.
Dear Diary, I'm scared. Is it okay to write that down? I know how lame it makes me look, but you won't care, right, Diary? No one at high school is going to talk to me. Mom says HS will be better than middle school, but she always says stuff like that. How would she know what it's like to be me? She was a cheerleader and probably homecoming queen. What would she have done if Mary Beth Astor called her Pizza Face? I wish I hadn't cried. That just made everything worse. And now I'll probably have to sit by MB in class. Crap. It used to be easy for me. So, like, what happened? In grade school, I had lots of friends. Well, so, okay, maybe they were Zach's friends. But we all played together, and I didn't know there was something wrong with me. Now I know. Boy, do I know. Madre is calling us for breakfast, the most important meal of the day. Yeah, right. Loser out. Dear Diary, you won't believe what happened today. Okay, I'm gonna write it all down so I don't forget anything. First of all, Mom was wrong about HS, at least at first. I walked into school with Zach, and even though he was holding my hand, it was like I was, like, invisible. Okay, maybe I shouldn't have worn the pink tutu and high tops, but I'm not like those other girls. They know, and I know it. The clothes help keep them away. And so what if they laugh? Lunch was a horror fest. I walked into the lunchroom and almost puked. No one made eye contact with me. Zach was sitting with all his Barbie and Ken friends, and he waved me over. No way I was going to go there. So I took my book and went outside. That's when it happened, Diary. I was sitting on the grass by this scrawny tree, chewing and reading Wuthering Heights, when this girl just walked up and said, "Can I sit with you?" I told her it was social suicide, and she smiled. Smiled! Then she sat down, and we started talking. And Diary, we have, like, everything in common. I don't want to jinx it, but I think she wants to be my friend. How cool is that? Dear Diary, Lexi stayed the night at my house last night. We totally fooled Madre and pretended to go to sleep at 11, but then we snuck out and went down to the beach. We sat there for hours, talking mostly about Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. She likes me, and she doesn't care that no one else does. We are going to be Harry and Hermione, friends forever. Dear Diary, Lexi made me try out for the school play, Once Upon a Mattress, and I got the part. What would I do without her? Todd Limer asked Lexi to the Sadie Hawkins dance. She tried to keep it a secret, but high school is such a soap opera. No one can really keep a secret. Besides, Haley wanted me to know. She laughed when she told me and called me a loser who couldn't get a date. How does Mom always know when something is wrong? Anyway, I got home from school and she took one look at me and just walked over and hugged me. I tried to push her away, but she held on, and I burst into tears. Yes, Diary, that's how cool I am. When I was done telling her the story, she said I needed to remember that good friends wanted the best for each other, and I should remember that. I do, Diary. I do want Lexi to be happy. Totally, I don't care at all if she goes to the stupid dance. Lexi didn't go to the dance. She said she'd way rather stay home with her best friend and watch movies. So that's what we did. We made popcorn and watched movies. Zach stayed home with us. He said any dance without us was a total waste of... Nana? Jude looked up and saw her granddaughter standing by the bed. In her pink terry cloth sweats, with her curly blonde hair a mass of tangles, she looked exactly like Mia at that age, and it disoriented Jude just a little. For the first time in years, Mia felt close enough to touch. The diary had brought her back to Jude. Grace burst into tears.
My mommy left.
Love Grace better. She needs you. Jude got out of bed and scooped Grace into her arms. It's okay, baby, she whispered. And then suddenly, Jude was crying too. She clung to Grace, crying against the child's soft, plump cheek, smelling the sweet baby shampoo scent of her hair, remembering.
I told her I wanted to stay with Daddy, Grace said, sobbing. And I do want to be with Daddy, but I want my mommy too. I should have told her that.
Oh, Grace. Jude looked at her granddaughter through a blur of tears. In the soft focus, she saw not only Grace, but Zach and Mia, too. And Alexi, who had been a part of them. They were all in Grace's face, in her eyes, in the pink bow of her mouth. How had Jude forgotten that? No, she hadn't forgotten it. She'd known it all along. She'd looked away from it purposely, afraid that the pain would kill her. But not feeling had taken away her joy, too, left her in that gray haze of numbness. In a way, they were all together again in this moment, embraced in each other's arms, just as they would have been if Mia were alive. She carried Grace up onto Mia's big bed and snuggled with her there. Grace slowly opened her small fist. Resting on her palm lay the promise ring Zach had given Lexi all those years ago.
Look what Mommy gave me.
Jude picked up the fragile ring. This was what she'd been so upset by all those years ago, a little circle of white gold with a sapphire chip. She thought a ring like this could derail a young man's life. He was so romantic, she sighed. Grace popped her thumb in her mouth and mumbled,
Who?
Around it. Your daddy. I should have known that Miles and I would raise a romantic. Why hadn't she rejoiced that her son knew how to love deeply, and to dream of the future?
Why was it that pebbles looked like boulders until they were in your rearview mirror? He gave your mommy that ring for Christmas. Jude unhooked the slim gold chain necklace she wore